You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, Heat Nation. I'm David Ramillo, credentialed reporter and the host of Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Please make sure to subscribe to the show whenever you listen to podcasts to get the latest episodes. On Tuesday, after dropping a close game to the Raptors on Monday afternoon, the Heat were back at it against another Eastern Conference opponent. This time it was the Boston Celtics, and they'd have to find a way to win without Jimmy Butler, who sat out the game with soreness in his right ankle. And that's exactly what they did, behind some great performances from Bam Adebayo, Kelly Olynyk, Duncan Robinson, and Goran Dragic. With Jimmy Butler sitting out of the game, Eric Spoelstra had a big decision to make. Now, I'll add that at 4:45 during Spo's usual pregame presser, he did tell reporters that everyone was available. About an hour later, we found out that Jimmy would be sitting out the Celtics game. The good news is that he probably could have played and would have if it was a crucial game, but it wasn't at all. Miami held the lead the entire game, a lead that got as high as 16 at one point. And while Boston was able to cut the lead down considerably and make it a pretty close game, Miami was able to pull away and did just enough towards the end of the game to eke out a 112-106 win over the Celtics. Miami, of course, is chasing the Celtics for the third seed in the Eastern Conference, and the win over Boston on Tuesday closes that gap to just 1.5 games. So Miami very much in the race to get the third seed in the Eastern Conference and to avoid perhaps a better opponent once the playoffs begin in just a few weeks. But the big story of the game, Kelly Olynyk getting the starting nod. Without Jimmy there, Eric Spoelstra had some very big decisions to make. Obviously, he's already tinkered with the lineup pretty considerably, inserting Jay Crowder in place of Myers Leonard. With Jimmy out, there were other options. He could have gone with Derrick Jones Jr., who's kind of fallen out of the rotation. He could have put Myers back in there. He could have done something differently. Instead, he chose a big man. It just wasn't Leonard at all. It was Kelly Olynyk, maybe because of his familiarity with the Boston Celtics, the fact that he had his career high in points against his former team. Either way, it paid off dividends because he was 4 of 11 from the field, 5 of 6 from the line for 15 total points to go along with 8 assists, 6 rebounds, 2 steals, and a block. A fantastic overall game for Olynyk. Again, not particularly gaudy, just a really solid game. He seemed like he was a little step ahead of everybody. It was a fantastically bold decision from Spoelstra to go with Olynyk. Could have predicted that Olynyk would get the starting nod at some point just because he hasn't really been part of that lineup for at any point during the regular season. And to go there against the Celtics in a crucial must-win game, if you're fighting for seeding, if you're fighting for, again, a consistent winning during the Orlando bubble, to go with Olynyk was a really bold choice. But again, for it to pay off so wonderfully, and I think a big part of that is that this is the best version of KO that we've seen during his Heat tenure. He looks phenomenal. I can't get past the fact that he's just been so consistent with his scoring and his overall impact. He seems to be a little quicker. I think he has lost some weight. I remember asking him, even before going into the Orlando bubble, that he had changed his eating habits a little bit, how he was trying to focus on what to eat, because he's obviously lost a lot of weight since he joined Miami, and that's a big part of the culture there is, cutting out carbs and making sure that your caloric intake is the right kind of nutrients and calories that you need in order to build muscle and all these things. And he was, he really went into a pretty in-depth answer about his eating regimen, and it seems like it's paid off. He just seems a little leaner, a little bit quicker. He's healthy. He just looks like he's in really, really good shape, and he's just been able to contribute so much offensively. Defensively, it hasn't really been as glaring as you might have thought. He was really solid. The matchup was a little interesting. He started off on Daniel Theis, the Celtics center, and then they went with a small wing player, Jaylen Brown, to guard Bam Adebayo, and that move actually seemed to work, something I'll talk about a little bit later in the next segment when I get into Bam's overall impact. But he was just... For Olynyk, to see him perform so well and to get the nod, to get the confidence boost from Eric Spoelstra, they've talked about it. Everybody on the team has talked about Kelly's skill set. And I wonder, sometimes you get the sense that maybe they're just blowing smoke up your ass as a media member, or just, you know, media kind of reporters, myself included, tend to ask somewhat simplistic questions about guys that have the quote-unquote hot hand or are playing well, and a teammate's not going to throw anybody on the bus. But they've just been so consistent about saying that Kelly brings such an incredible skill set, that he can do so much, that they really trust him. Even a guy like Jay Crowder, who just recently started playing again with Kelly after having, you know, spent some time earlier in their careers together in Boston. It's just been so refreshing to see Olynyk become an impact player, and I really do believe that he is as good as he's ever been in a Heat jersey. I don't know if he had a more consistent stretch when he was with the Celtics. I know, again, that consistency has always been the biggest concern about Olynyk, but he's really paying off. He's just been a very great addition to the team, and he's just playing so well that he's contributing to actual wins during a playoff-type situation. My second story of the game was Bam Adebayo. I've got to talk about Bam because Eric Spoelstra mentioned in post-game presser that he needed to get the ball in Bam's hand. He wanted to put the ball in his All-Stars' hands to make an impact, and Bam absolutely paid off. Huge night from him, 21 points, 5 of 12 from the field, 12 rebounds, 2 assists, a steal, a block, and 18 trips to the free throw line. He finished just 11 of 18. That was not great. You would have liked for him to connect at least a few more of those, but 18 trips to the line, and a night when they were missing Jimmy Butler, and you know that his ability to get to the free throw line is so huge, a factor in Miami's offensive flow. Bam being able to get to the line 18 times was huge. I will say, I was a little concerned with some of what Bam did, because it seemed like the small wing player, especially away from the basket, really does give him some fits. Bam has never really had much polish as far as his back to the basket game. He struggles somewhat with his low post moves. I don't really think he has an established low post move, and I think you can put a smaller guard, a guy who's a little bit more physical, somebody like a Jay Crowder maybe, or even a Derrick Jones Jr. to some degree, would probably challenge Bam if he was on the opposing team. But Jaylen Brown, muscular, small though, a small wing type player, and he was able to really just challenge Adebayo. They also had Gordon Hayward on him on times. Jason Tatum was guarding him at times. Even Marcus Smart, I think, was able to impact Adebayo to some degree. But that drew a lot of fouls too. I will say it was a really strange whistle, a pretty tight one. It worked in Miami's favor as they did shoot 39 free throws to just 27 free throws for Boston. I'm sure Celtics fans probably don't like the way that those calls went, but for Adebayo, he was able to draw a lot of contact. There were some really nice moves from him where he was able to get to the hoop, continues to use off-ball movement as he's cutting to the line. Even if there's somebody else who has the ball in the baseline or something like that, even a pass or an outside shooter like Duncan or anybody who's just around that area sees Adebayo constantly moving, they're going to try and find him the ball. Andre Iguodala continues to do the right things almost every time. He's always seems to be in the right place. He makes the right pass, doesn't force anything, and he's just been a really nice add. Like I think you're not going to get a huge game out of Iguodala at this point in his career. That's just not in the cards for somebody his age, but especially on this team where he's not going to have that kind of a huge impact. Either way, he just makes really nice little moves here and there that always winds up contributing to winning, and it really paid off in his on-the-floor effort alongside Adebayo and others. But as far as Bam is concerned, just a huge game, really, really stepped up in Jimmy's absence, and it should get a lot of coverage because it was a phenomenal performance. Again, you look around the league, and so much of the newsmakers are a guy who had 35 points or 40 points, or even a TJ Warren who's averaging over 40 points per game in the Orlando bubble. But a guy like Bam just does so much so well all across the board and has such a huge impact on winning that it should deserve and get much more credit than it probably does. In the next segment, I'll go through the good, the bad, and the ugly, and my takeaways from tonight's game. But I wanted to talk to you about my bookie because sports are back, baby. Say it with me now. Sports are back. I've been waiting for this day since March. And now that it's here, I've only got one thing on my mind. My bookie, it's a home run, a slam dunk, triple overtime game-winning shot all wrapped into one. I love it. You love it. And that should be all you need to hear in order to start betting today. My bookie is up to the minute odds on all your favorite teams. And with the start of Major League Baseball, there's never been a better time to start playing. With my bookie, it's easy. You bet, you win, they pay. Feeling good about your team's chances this year? Be sure to check out MyBookie's World Series future bets. Nothing shows you believe in your team like betting on them before the season's even begun. But why stop with baseball? Smart bettors are always looking towards the future, and in this case, that means basketball, hockey, football. MyBookie's already accepting bets on all your favorite NBA, NHL, and NFL games. There's never been a better time to start exploring the world of online sports betting. If you join today, MyBookie will match your deposit 100%. Plus, they'll toss you a free $10 MLB future wager. All you got to do is enter the promo code LOCKEDONNBA when signing up. That's LOCKEDONNBA. Remember, at MyBookie, the terms are simple. You bet, you win, they pay. Recapping every game in the Orlando bubble, so make sure to subscribe on your favorite app to listen to podcasts, and make sure you always get the latest episodes by asking your smart device to play Locked On Heat when you get in your car to get your team every day. Some additional takeaways from today's game: Goran Dragic, just a phenomenal game from him. I know I keep making some positives out of it, but I guess I can't overstate the fact that this is a really solid win for a team without Jimmy Butler. It was kind of a statement game in many, many ways after having lost a tight one. You just have to like what Miami is at right now from almost every standpoint. Defensively, they played very well. They limited what Boston could do from the three-point line. They only shot 10 of 33 for about 30%. And a lot of that was without, again, they were without Jimmy Butler, and they still managed to play a very, very good defensive game. Some of those shots were pretty bad, I'll be honest with you. I look at the Celtics, and Jason Tatum had a kind of quiet 23 points, but Gordon Hayward went 0 of 5 from three-point line. Jaylen Brown also went 0 of 5. Semi Ojeleye went 1 of 5. Marcus Smart went 0 for 2. That's pretty woeful from behind the line. Again, 10 of 33 overall for 30%. Not great. Some of that was due to Miami's defense, but some of it also Boston's offense was just pretty, I don't know. They didn't seem to have any kind of spark to them, and they were being, I saw John Corrales, my counterpart over at Locked On Celtics, say that Miami was just dictating the kind of energy terms of the game. They were really creating the flow of the game, and Boston was just responding more than creating any kind of pattern themselves. And that was pretty evident there. I think the Celtics, not until that run late in the game where they closed the gap a little bit, did it seem like they had any kind of real direction or any point to what they were doing out there. But in any case, back to my takeaways on Dragic. 20 points for him, 6 to 12 from the line. Struggled a little bit from his three-point shot, 1 of 5, 7 of 7 from the line, however. 3 rebounds, 3 assists, 2 steals. Really great. Again, continuing to help a lot on his help defense. Looked really, really solid. He just was really, really energetic. Seemed to always have an understanding about the pace. Really attacked when was necessary. Was willing to pull up from the perimeter when he had that shot going. Always seemed to have a little chip on his shoulder. I got to be honest, there was a nice stretch there during the second quarter where it was pretty obvious that there was some mounting tension. Maybe, I'm sorry, it might have been the third quarter when there was some mounting tension there between Olynyk, Marcus Smart, who kept jawing at the team. He fouled out in the third quarter, but he didn't shut up during the third quarter. He kept talking. Semi Ojeleye was a little frustrated with Olynyk and some of the fouls he was drawing. I think he took it against Goran Dragic as well. And at one point, Goran kind of stopped short and drew a foul from Ojeleye. It was very interesting to see how there's this kind of tension there. I feel like as competitive as the game against Toronto was, there's no ill will. Jimmy Butler and Kyle Lowry are friendly towards one another. They were Olympians together. There have been All-Stars numerous times together. So I think there's a competitive spirit there. It just doesn't seem as much animosity. Boston and Miami, however, it seemed like it was a little tense. I'm not sure what the reasoning for that was, but it did not seem like they were very friendly towards one another. And Goran's activity and overall impact certainly contributed to that. Whereas the Heat struggled with their shooting on Monday against the Raptors, one of my other takeaways was how good they were in that regard, especially in the first half. When that wasn't the case against Toronto and against Boston, Miami shot 35% from three on 43 attempts. So they continue to be one of the most prolific shooting teams in the bubble. Every team is putting up a significant amount of three-pointers within the Orlando bubble, but Miami has been among the best of those. They just continue to rely on the three-point shot. At some point, they did look like they were, it's kind of live by the three, die by the three. it worked in Miami's case because they just continue to be one of the better hot shooting teams from the league. They are the best shooting team, but they also have been pretty consistent even in Orlando. And so they just seem to find the open three, they'll look for it. Duncan Robinson at one point took a heat check three on a fast break opportunity there. That was pretty interesting. It's not something that we've seen from him a lot, but clearly he has a green light. And my, you know, against the Celtics, it paid off. They were just impressive from the perimeter. It really kept Boston's defense from settling in there. They weren't quite sure. And Duncan, I think, had a huge game, even not from a productive standpoint there. It was a solid game from him. 21 points. I mean, really, really good game from him. 6 of 12 field goals, 5 of 11 from three-point range. You can go along with 3 rebounds and 2 assists. But what he does so well, you know, he was able to just get those shots going. He talked about it after the game that he wanted to make a concerted effort to have an impact against Boston, being from the area himself. He grew up, he said, 45 minutes away from the TD Garden. And he wanted, you know, he grew up watching the Celtics. He knows about the team, and he wanted to have a good game against them, especially after having struggled or been taken out of his element by the Toronto Raptors. That wasn't the case on Tuesday. He had his shot. He was open. And he had some really, really big shots down the stretch, especially late in the fourth quarter. There were he hit 2 consecutive three-pointers there to help give an added cushion to Miami when they were kind of floundering a little bit and they weren't able to pull away completely from the Celtics. Duncan really helped, and that just gave just enough of a cushion where they could let Boston kind of ease their way and not have to worry about coming out or not having a win after tonight's game. So really fantastic effort from him, and he just continues to be really impressive. He is a fantastic weapon. Everybody starts to understand now that what his impact is. He's just fun to watch because he stretches the floor so well. I don't know what it's going to take to keep Duncan on this team, but you want to make that effort at all costs because he is crucial to Miami's offense. He continues to be a supremely impactful player. Even when he struggles like he did against Toronto, you know that he can make an impact in other ways too. And so you need to do whatever's possible to re-sign him. But that's a whole other story. That's something to talk about at some point in the far future, let's hope, because we've got other things to worry about, including an upcoming game against the Milwaukee Bucks. The good, the bad, and the ugly from the Boston win are next. You're listening to Locked On Heat. Reminder that you can always reach me via email at lockedonheat@gmail.com or on Twitter using the hashtag AskLOHeat. The good, Miami's defense, but I want to actually give a shout out to Eric Spoelstra. I think if you saw the news from this past week, the Coaches Association or the coaches of the NBA voted on who they thought would be the best coach, who should be the award-winning coaches. And they gave the award to Billy Donovan. It was actually a two-way tie to Billy Donovan, who has done a transformative job with Chris Paul there. I'm not sure I agree. I think he's done a pretty good job of getting the most out of that team, especially when they were largely discounted. I did not discount him. If you can check the receipts on this, but earlier, before the start of season, I was kind of bullish on what the Thunder could do, and a big part of that was because of Chris Paul and his work over the offseason. I knew that he'd be energized, and they had a good, talented group there. It was just enough. It was a right fit. They have Danilo Gallinari, who's basically an underrated superstar. Well, maybe not superstar, but he's an underrated player, and he's done a fantastic job, but they also have some talent there. Overall, though, they gave him the award. He shares it with Mike Budenholzer. And that's a little surprising because I've talked to some Bucks media, and they don't think he's necessarily deserving of the award. And that's to say they really do like what his what the job he's done. But they also recognize that a guy like Nick Nurse in Toronto probably deserves it. Maybe even the Memphis Grizzlies coach who took a team that had no business sniffing at the playoff race and has really done a great job of getting them to focus on winning and to get the most out of their rookie in John Morant. But Eric Spoelstra quietly continues to be one of those underrated great coaches. And I think that gets kind of overlooked a little bit, especially when you go up against a Brad Stevens, who is so revered for his out-of-timeout plays and the kind of system that he runs, his ability to connect with players. That all seems to be so overblown. And I don't know it's just because he's white and coaching in Boston, or if it's just a Boston thing in general. He's a fine coach. He's also achieved very little over the course of his coaching career, and that's not a knock on him necessarily. He just hasn't been able to get an extra level of his teams. But I really just liked what Miami was able to do on both offense and defense, but particularly on the offensive end. Spoelstra just called a fantastic game. They were running these incredible screens, multiple staggered screens there, creating open looks. A guy would cut in one direction, draw multiple defenders with him, and then that would leave somebody else to cut to the baseline for a wide open look or flare out to the three-point line for a wide open shot. It was just, it looked so seamless. He kind of just mucked things up a little bit by going with the zone at some certain points there. He just knows inherently what to do. I've made the case before that players and these games have been more exciting, that players are playing at an all-time level because they're so free of distraction and you just focus on basketball. I wonder if the same point could be made about coaching. Like, Eric Spoelstra has done such a good job, and you know he eats, sleeps, and breathes coaching. He just wants to continue to watch film. He's probably been reviewing everything. He don't have much else to do. He doesn't have to spend time with his wife and kids. Obviously he's connecting with them via phone and Facebook and FaceTime, I'm sorry, and all these other things. But, hey, that's not the same thing as having to spend hours and hours. You don't have to go home. You're that, right there. You go right into it the very next day or the next hour. And if you don't get much sleep, you can always just click on the TV and continue to watch highlights of any other games from around the Orlando bubble. So I wonder if he's just – this might be – the very best environment for Eric Spoelstra to find a way to thrive. It's been very interesting. I do have to get into the bad of the game, and that continues to be Kendrick Nunn, who was a little bit more effective today, but considering how ineffective he was against the Toronto Raptors, that's not saying a whole heck of a lot. 17 minutes played, 2 of 6 from the floor, 0 for 3 from 3-point line, just total 14 points, and not a solid outing from him. It was not bad, which is the best he's been so far, and that's unfortunate because we need more from him. And although you know the Heat were able to pull out a victory against the Celtics, you want to be able to rely on something from Kendrick Nunn, whether it's just his ability to knock down shots consistently or some defensive tenacity that maybe has heretofore gone unseen. But it's a little disconcerting. Even Derrick Jones Jr. was able to get more playing time today. After being somewhat out of the rotation, he did get 21 minutes, even knocked down a three-pointer en route to 6 points for him. Not a huge showing, but making some impact defensively, and I think that's why he got as much playing time as he did over guys like Kendrick and others. The ugly, as I mentioned before, Boston's shooting was just really, really not good. Some of that shot selection was just, you kind of scratch your head and you wonder what they're trying to make an impact with, or how they're trying to change things single-handedly. That just doesn't work. I'm sure Celtics fans are somewhat frustrated about. I also have to mention, as far as ugly is concerned, Goran Dragic limped off the floor late in the game after he was trying to keep the ball away from the Boston defense, who was trying to find a way to foul him in the waning seconds of the game. He leapt up into the air to pass the ball away, and then when he landed, it seemed like he turned his ankle somewhat. The replay was somewhat inconclusive, but either way, he reached for his ankle, kind of limped off there, and he was taken back into the locker room. X-rays were taken, and Adrian Wojnarowski of ESPN was the first to mention that those X-rays were negative. Tim Reynolds later added some context and said that he didn't think there was going to need any kind of treatment. So I'm not sure whether he's going to be available the next day. But a lot of that brings me to what happens against the Milwaukee Bucks, who lost to the Brooklyn Nets on Tuesday as well. So you know they're going to be a little engaged. If you remember my pre-restart predictions, I also thought that not that they would win. Look, I've been on it. Look, I'll be honest. I'll take credit when it's due. I'm 3 for 3 so far. They beat the Nuggets. I knew that they would lose to the Raptors, and they beat the Celtics. I also predicted a loss to the Milwaukee Bucks, so I'm not sure if Goran Dragic will play. At this point, I would assume that he does not, and I don't think it's necessary to go against a good team like Milwaukee. You've already proven that you can beat them. Give some of the guys like Tyler an opportunity to get his points there, see what it's like for Jay Crowder and Iguodala and Derrick Jones Jr. and some of these other guys to go in there and establish themselves a little bit more against Giannis, etc. Bucks lost to the Nets in part because they only played their starters, Chris Middleton and Giannis specifically, in the first half. So I'm not sure what Budenholzer's process is. I'm not sure if they're going to just continue to sit these guys out now that they've already established that they're the one seed in the East and seeding doesn't really matter as much. For Miami, that brings out whether or not you want to continue to push yourselves against other opponents in the future. You know, with seeding mattering so little because there is no home court advantage or anything like that, you wonder whether or not Eric Spoelstra wants to continue to push guys out there. Again, Jimmy tweaked his ankle, perhaps, even though it didn't look that way against the Raptors, and they just wanted to sit him out for precautionary sake. Goran actually did seem like he was hurt. I wouldn't put him out there on the floor on Thursday. As much as I'd love to see him out there having a positive impact, and as much as I'd like to see them pull away with a victory over Milwaukee, just doesn't seem like much of a risk. I'm sorry, it doesn't seem like it's worth the risk, and so I wouldn't take that chance. Eric Spoelstra surprised me with his flexibility and decision-making process, so you'll see what happens on Thursday, but I'll be here to report it for you as always, and I'll have a recap for you following that Bucks game on Thursday. Be sure to subscribe and follow this podcast to get the latest episode of Locked On Heat as soon as it's out. I'm David Ramil signing off, and thank you as always for your support.
Back it up, D.